Welcome. You're listening to the first podcast from the Collaboration for Poverty Research, produced by the Stanford Center for the Study of Poverty and Inequality. I'm Diantha Parker. Today on the podcast, think about $3,000 for a second. For most of us, it's a nice sum of money. It might cover a mortgage payment or two, a family vacation, or maybe a child's tuition. But $3,000 is also kind of a magic figure for certain economists these days. It happens to be roughly the amount that some low-income workers get from the IRS if their income is below a certain level.
The Earned Income Tax Credit, Child Tax Credit, they don't distinguish on the basis of children's age, and maybe they should.
Economist Greg Duncan thinks that $3,000, however the family gets it, makes the difference for kids under the age of five. His research shows if a family's income increases by $3,000 each year before the kids turn five, those children will actually end up working more hours and earning more money as adults, and they'll have a better shot at providing for their own families. Duncan thinks government policies, like the Earned Income Tax Credit, could help with this if they were geared more toward supporting very young kids.
The future of America's prosperity depends on that. You know, as a baby boomer, I want the next generation of workers to be productive so they can pay for my Social Security.
So visualize that $3,000 again, but this time in the hands of a family struggling to make ends meet. It could help them rent a nicer apartment in a safer neighborhood. It might buy a reliable car, putting a better preschool or daycare center within reach. It might even mean a little cash for extras like trips to the zoo, music lessons, or books. And it might also allow parents to pass up working that extra shift so they can spend more time with their families. Greg Duncan thinks boosting the incomes of families with very young children can be a make-or-break difference for kids. Work Duncan is doing with Stanford's Collaboration for Poverty Research is revealing not just how poverty can affect young children, but when. He's a professor of education at the University of California at Irvine, and an economist by training, but he says his research is always focused on poverty and child development.
Why it is that kids who grow up in disadvantaged circumstances end up doing worse in school than kids growing up in more affluent circumstances, go on to have less successful labor market careers. And I'm particularly interested in policies that are resonating with the American public that might be put in place to help equalize the playing field.
Duncan and his colleague Catherine Magnuson have been working from a study of children and families that began in 1968. Now the kids in the study are about 37. Duncan says it's the first time economists have been able to track conditions from the prenatal year to middle adulthood.
You can look at kids who are in different economic circumstances in early childhood, in middle childhood, in the elementary school years, in adolescence. And you can try to assess which of those periods seems to matter the most for how kids turn out in terms of their earnings as adults. And what the most recent research is showing, this just came out this year, is indeed that it is economic conditions in early childhood, the first 5 years, that seem to be far more important for how kids turn out eventually than economic circumstances later on in their childhood.
Duncan says this five-year period is where neuroscience and developmental psychology come in.
In the first few months of life, there's just this explosion of neuronal connections in a child's brain. And the wiring can either proceed in a very orderly kind of way, or they can be wired up in very inefficient ways.
Duncan says kids in a family with some kind of support get a better crack at this good kind of wiring. He and his colleagues gleaned this, in part, from their study of families in a program in Milwaukee in the 1990s. The program was called New Hope and opened to families where someone was already working 30 hours a week. It offered four kinds of help: an earnings supplement to boost income above the poverty line, a child care subsidy, a health insurance subsidy, and the right to a community service job for 6 months. Duncan says few people took all of the benefits all of the time.
For some families, the child care subsidy was everything because they really needed to get their kids in a high-quality child care situation. For other families, grandma was available to take care of the kids, and they would not have wanted to trust the kids to someone they didn't know, especially younger kids. Other families desperately needed the health insurance, and they were afraid of going off of Medicaid because their kid was having asthma problems and needed a connection to the healthcare system.
1,400 households expressed interest, and were told it was a lottery. Only 700 families could take part. So Duncan and his colleagues could compare the families in the program with those outside of it.
For families that were not working when they signed up for New Hope, there was a substantial increase in work. A lot of them made this transition into full-time work with New Hope's benefits. On the other hand, about a third of the families were already working full-time. And if anything, their work dropped somewhat. They abandoned second jobs. They didn't opt for the overtime that took them up to 50 hours or 55 hours a week. They dropped back down to 40 hours, all for the sake of balancing this work and family set of dilemmas that we all face.
This self-reliance didn't square with current thinking about people on public assistance. Figuring out work-life balance was considered an affluent problem. But Duncan says the New Hope families needed little guidance. A fuller picture emerged from the teachers of children in all 1,400 families. The teachers didn't know who was in New Hope and who wasn't. But they reported the New Hope kids were getting higher grades, behaving better, and adjusting to school more easily, especially younger ones who were just starting.
Something about extending these benefits to parents worked through the family to the betterment of the kids.
Duncan and others now think that if a child's family gets a $3,000 bump in income each year that child is under five, then that child will work an additional 135 more hours a year as an adult, at least by the time he or she is 35. He says it's a relatively small investment.
If you count the prenatal year, the birth year, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's 7 years altogether. So it's $21,000.
He also says the potential cost of lost productivity is much higher.
As a baby boomer, I want the next generation of workers to be productive so they can pay for my Social Security.
And even beyond, right?
Right. There's so much that depends on how productive the next generation of American workers are.
Greg Duncan is cautiously optimistic about that next generation. He thinks his research shows existing policies, like the earned income tax credit, could be adjusted to support kids and families when they need it most. He also thinks it might not take long to see results. Duncan says if policies can help smooth the path for some of these kids, that $3,000 more a year will reap huge returns for all of us. You've been listening to a podcast from Stanford University's Collaboration for Poverty Research. Funding is generously provided by the Elfinworks Foundation. The editor of this podcast series is Christopher Weimer. I'm Diantha Parker, and thanks for joining us. For more on this and other topics, visit us at inequality.com.